Let me just first begin with an outline of what I'm going to talk about over the next week. So today, I'm going to tell you about distributions. And in particular, I'll be telling you about test functions. And then defining distributions. And telling you about how to use them, what kind of operations you can perform on them, in particular about their derivatives. Am I writing large enough? Can everyone see the back? Okay, great. And then in the second and third lectures, we'll be telling you about orthogonal polynomials. And let's see, I'll be discussing their construction. Recurrence relations. Properties of their zeros, Rodriguez formula, the generalized Rodriguez formula, I'll also provide a complete classification, and discuss their relation to Sturm-Liouville theory. And then in my final lecture, let's see. Okay, and in my final lecture, I will tell you about the gamma, zeta, and hypergeometric functions. Okay, and all of these things come up in all different areas of physics, so they're very useful to know. Well, okay, so let's start with some motivation. Why do we need to learn about distributions? Okay, and so first of all, what a distribution is it's like a generalized function. I'll make that more precise later in the lecture. But why isn't our ordinary definition of a function good enough in certain situations? So one example that I'm sure you're all familiar with is the example of a point charge. So if we have a point charge, then its charge distribution is expected to look something like zero if you're away from the origin, and infinity at the origin. And of course, we want the total charge to be some finite number. Okay, so I'm sure most of you have seen this before, but this is fine for certain operations. I mean, if we're just going to calculate the total charge or something, then we don't really need all the mechanisms that I'll tell you about later today. But if we want to perform other operations on this charge distribution, because it's not a function, there's no well-defined function that has these properties, then we need to think a little bit more carefully about what type of object this charge distribution is. Other places where we need distributions are, we'll often encounter derivatives or integrals that don't really make sense if you think of the of the objects as functions instead of distributions. So I'll show you how to make sense of objects like the nth derivative of the absolute value of x. So intuitively, you might be able to guess what this means, but I'll show you how to do this precisely, which will be useful in more complicated situations. Or we could run across an expression like the integral over the real line of 1 over x dx. So we know this integral diverges if we just integrate from 0 to infinity. Is there any way to make sense of this if we integrate over the entire real line? Okay. And other applications include, I'll show you, the existence of limits of sequences of functions. So, turns out if we try to take a limit of a sequence of functions, the answer might not be a function. This can be problematic if we, in many cases, and I'll show you how to make sense in general of the limit of a sequence of functions. And it also turns out that if you are trying to solve a variational problem, like Dennis was telling you about, you don't always have a solution that's a function, even if you have a very seemingly well-posed variational problem. Sometimes the answer is not a function. Any questions so far? Okay. So before I go on and define what a derivative is, let me talk a bit about what about function spaces. So you've heard a bit about this from Anna. But I just want to review very briefly a couple points. So again, a function space is just a vector space. Whose elements are functions. And so it's a vector space, so that means it has a norm, which satisfies positivity. Which means that the norm of the function is always greater than or equal to 0, and if the norm of the function is 0, then the function itself is 0. It also satisfies triangle inequality and linear homogeneity, which I won't really need very much today. So this is just that lambda f is equal to lambda times f. I'm not going to use the triangle inequality. So, very good. And in particular, the function space is a Hilbert space if the norm comes from the inner product. So I'll mostly be talking about Hilbert spaces. Okay, and so take the inner product, two functions. I'll be talking about the particular inner product A, B, F star, G, dx for today's lecture. Tomorrow and Thursday, I'll be generalizing this definition. And the norm is just square root of the inner product of function with itself. Okay, so any questions? Good. So for the most part, I'll be talking. Yeah. So this norm defines the function space L2 of AB, just functions whose square is integrable, are elements of this function space. But it turns out that if we just look at our requirement here, the elements of this function space are not actually functions, but they're equivalence classes of functions. So if I take the element, the function f1 of x, which is just identically 0, of course that has norm 0, so that's a 0 element. But if I take the function f2, which is 0 everywhere but at a single point, so if x is not equal to 1, and pi if x equals 1, this also, you square it and integrate it, you also get 0. So these two are the same functions. So we're looking at elements of L2AB. These are actually equivalence classes of functions, and we can't, we can only define them up to changing the value at a single point by something like this. So 0 is any element that's 0 except for at finitely many points. So that's will become something analogous will happen when we look at distributions. Okay. So let's move on to distribution. So the simplest example of a distribution is the delta function, which I'm sure most of you have seen defined as a limit of a sequence of functions. So we could define it as f of x, where f is the limit as sigma goes to 0 of this function f sigma of x. I'll define f sigma of x to be just 1 over sigma for x less than sigma over 2 and 0 otherwise. So this is just a function that looks like this. This is f sigma, this is x. And as we take the limit, as sigma goes to 0, this just becomes narrower and taller. And intuitively, it approaches the Dirac delta function. Okay. And most of what I'm going to say will work for any other definition you like. So there's lots of different limits like this of sequences of function. So you can choose. So the first point I'd like to make is that this limit is not an element of L2AB, which is our function space. So if we take the norm, So in L2AB, the norm of F sigma is just the integral from minus infinity to infinity of F sigma of x squared, which is just the integral from minus sigma over 2 to sigma over 2 of 1 over sigma squared, which is just 1 over sigma. Yes? Yes, thank you. I'll put a square here. Thank you. Great. So in particular, as we take the limit that sigma goes to 0, this diverges, so it doesn't have a finite norm. So the elements of this function space are the elements with finite norm. So this is not an element of this function space. OK, so it's not an element of this particular function space, but is it a function at all? And the answer to that is no. And let me just try to show that a little more rigorously. Okay, so perhaps you don't like that particular definition I gave. So the argument I'm going to give is very general. So choose your favorite. Sequence of functions that converges to the delta function. So what do we mean that sequence converges to the delta function? That means that the basically two properties of what we think of as delta, basically the limit as sigma goes to 0 of the function evaluated away from 0 should be 0. And the integral of each element of our sequence should be 1. So the def. Yes, thank you. OK, so the function f I gave up there is one example, but there are many others. So if we have a sequence like this, then what is the integral of g? So we'd like it also to be 1. We know the integral of the delta function is 1. We know that the limit as g of g sigma goes to 0 at each point. So we can draw some boxes here that are going to be everywhere above the g. So let's suppose that we draw a box here of width epsilon and height 1. And maybe it doesn't converge quite as fast as 0 over here. You can draw another box here of height 1 and width epsilon over 2, and so on. Draw an infinite sequence of these boxes where these boxes are everywhere above the limit function g. Now, if we do that, we can see that the integral of g of x dx has to be less than the area of these boxes. The area of these boxes is just epsilon plus epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 4, and so on, which we just resum this series, we get 2 epsilon. And epsilon could be arbitrary here. So the limit of this integral is the integral of the limit function, is just zero. So even though the integral of every element of our sequence is one, the integral of the limit function is zero. So this is not very nice at all. So if g was a function, then we could interchange the limits of we could basically say the limit as sigma goes to zero of minus infinity to infinity of g sigma of x. So if it were a function, then this integral would be equal to the integral of the limit as sigma goes to zero of g sigma of x dx. But that's obviously not the case. So g is not actually the delta function. It's not a function at all. Okay. Any questions on that argument? Okay. So so what is delta exactly? So we know that delta basically behaves nicely as long as we keep it under an integral sign. So let's see if we can expand on that and provide a more formal definition of what delta is. So we can integrate not only just integral delta, but we can integrate delta times a function. And so let's define a class of functions called test functions. So these are going to be things that we can integrate distributions against to get a number. Okay. So I'm going to choose for the rest of my lecture the set D, which is the set of continuous infinitely differentiable functions with compact support. So what I mean by compact support is that there is zero except in some finite region. So this last requirement is slightly stronger than I need. Most of what I'm going to say would follow if we just demanded that these die off, the functions die off at infinity faster than any polynomial, but it will complicate a lot of the discussion without adding much. So I'll just take functions that are zero at infinity. They're zero outside any finite region, then they're zero at infinity, and we can neglect boundary conditions completely. Okay. So this is a vector space. I'll just consider real functions. Most of it follows to complex functions, too. There questions? Yeah.
Is it possible? Can you show the example of the function with compact support and the infinite differentiable?
Okay, so it has to be continuous, right? So it's going to, look something like. So these are not going to be analytic functions in particular. Could look something like this. If we have a function that's all of its derivatives are, say it's analytic in some range, and all of its it'll be continuous and.
Um,
once will be enough for most of what I'll say. If it, n times is no problem either. So. Right. Yes. So just, n where n is large. So you can take. You're never really going to take more than two derivatives anyway. So we'll just say differentiable twice. Okay. So first of all, this is a vector space. It's not. It's more restrictive vector space than L2 of AB, and we can define a dual vector space. Of linear functionals. Of D to R. So that means that if we have an element of our dual space, we can act on an element of our test function space and get a real number. Okay, and our space of distributions is going to be the largest such dual space. And so the space of, yes? So a dual space is just any space that's linear that when we take an element of the dual space and act on it, act on an element of our original space, we get a real number. So in particular, an example of that would be integrating, so we could say that D star is a space of function. We could say D star is the same as D, so it's the space of continuous differentiable functions with compact support. And we could say that our map here of U of a function of our dual space on an element of our original space to R is just multiply the functions together and integrate them. So that defines a map from our dual space to the real numbers. And so, and in fact, that's very similar to how we're going to define our space of distributions. So D prime, the space. Does that answer your question? Or yes? Okay. So D prime is the space of distributions. And it's just the largest possible set dual space R. Largest space. Largest D star. And what does that mean in practice? So that's the mathematical definition. But in practice, that just means that basically if so largest, and it also has to be continuous. In practice, that just means that, okay, great. So a space is continuous. So let's say the star is continuous. If phi of n goes to phi, so if we have a sequence in our original vector space that converges to a function, then if this implies that if we take u of phi n, this will converge to u of the limit. So basically, this is just a generalization of your normal definition of continuity in for functions of, say, a real variable. So that means if you have a sequence of real numbers that converges to a real number, then the a function of that sequence will converge to the value of the function at the limit point. And so this is just the generalization then. Henrik? Yes. Yes, sorry, it's the largest D prime that is continuous. So. Yes. Well, you could define, for instance, a very trivial D star. For instance, you could define that U of any element is just zero. So that's not a very interesting space. It's continuous because U of anything is zero, so this converges, but it's just not very interesting. So. Yes, yeah, so that would be equivalent. That's equivalent to what I'm saying here. Okay. So in practice, what does this mean? So it turns out that if we're just dealing with this space D of R, then we can think of so delta. It turns out is going to be an element of this space of distributions. And so we know that the integral of delta of x times phi of x dx is just phi of 0. And it turns out that if we make these definitions, this is true basically in general. So if we just replace delta with an arbitrary element of our distribution space, then we can think of this as being so U is basically this map of U of phi. We can think of being as just defined in this way, which is going to be some real number. Okay. So this notation is, if you show it to a mathematician, they might complain a little bit, but in practice in physics, it's good enough for essentially all purposes. Another notation, so you can often say the distribution is a function of the test function. This is a second notation. You often see a third notation that sometimes comes up is you can write U of phi is just the pairing of U with phi. So these are all essentially equivalent notations for our purposes. So note this is not an inner product because these are different spaces. Even though it's defined essentially in the same way as we define an inner product of, say, two elements of L2, AB, these are different spaces, so it's a pairing, not an inner product. Okay. So another thing to note here is that the say delta of a specific number is undefined. For all x, not just x equals 0, for x equals 1, we can't say delta of 1 is undefined in this notation. And that's for the same reason that elements of L2 of AB are equivalence classes, because if we add basically a distribution that's 0 everywhere except at a finite point, do this integral, we're always going to get the same thing. So we can only we can't really make sense of the value of delta or any other distribution at a single point. And if we want to think about it precisely, we need to only deal with deltas under an integral sign. Okay. So what are the properties of distributions? So first of all, it follows quite directly from what I've the definitions I've made that distributions are linear. I'll leave that to you to check. So, prime is linear, meaning that u plus v of phi is equal to u of phi plus v of phi. And lambda u of phi is equal to lambda u of phi. So you can check this. It's only a few lines. Okay. And another point I'd like to make is that functions that are locally integrable, that basically are square integrable, define distributions. So if we have a function, say f of x is equal to, say 1 for x less than 1 and 0 otherwise, we can also think of this as a distribution. We can integrate this squared, so we can integrate this against any test function. Okay, so what else can we do with distributions? So one thing we'd like to be able to do is take a derivative of a distribution. So how can we do that if we, as I stated earlier, a distribution is undefined at any point? So we can't just define it in the normal way as the limit, something goes to 0. This just doesn't make any sense. We can't make sense of any of these expressions here. So what else can we do? So let's look at the case where the distribution comes from a function. So that's a special case of distributions. And let's see how we can try to define a derivative in that case and then generalize it to arbitrary distributions. So we want to define u prime of phi. So let's look at the case where u is a distribution. So that's equal to, u is a function, u prime of x, phi of x, dx. So if u is a function, then we can integrate this by parts and get u of x, phi of x, okay, so this step is okay if it's a function. And we've chosen our test functions to be quite nice functions so that we can neglect these boundary conditions. Basically, this is 0 at plus and minus infinity, and it goes to 0 fast enough that it kills anything here. So this is just minus the integral of u of x phi prime. So this works as long as u is a function. So let's just take this as a definition in the more general case and see what that implies. Yes? Sure. Yes.
Physics related. In physics, we actually have like the function tiny function 1, not actually 2 test functions that vanish quickly enough. So take big x squared delta of x, or whatever. So right. X squared of delta x minus 5.
You're saying x squared times delta of x?
Yeah, and I mean, when you integrate it, I mean, x squared isn't the test function.
Okay, so
you still assume that if you acted with delta prime of x on x squared, it would still give you the same thing.
Right. I will get to that in just a minute. Good question. Right. So yeah. So we can think of this as a function multiplied by a distribution, and I'll show you how to define that in general in about 10 minutes. Okay. So we can take this as a definition. So define u prime of phi just to be minus u of phi prime. So this is called either the weak or the distributional derivative. Okay. So let's check and make sure that this definition makes sense. For a simple case. So we know that a Heaviside function, as a function we usually define it as 1 for x greater than 0 and 0 for x less than 0. It defines a distribution. We can see just by plugging in our definition. So this is equal to and so we can take this as the definition of the Heaviside distribution, which is very closely related to the Heaviside function. Okay, so if we want to compute the derivative of the Heaviside function, let's just check and make sure that it gives us what we would expect. So this is equal to, by our definition, Heaviside distribution of phi prime, which is just the minus the integral from 0 to infinity of phi prime of x dx, which we can integrate and get 5 infinity minus 5, 0, or this is 0, compact support is 5, 0, which is delta of phi. So that means that theta prime is equal to delta, just as we'd expect. So our definition makes sense for the cases we know. So let's look at a slightly more involved example. So let's compute the distributional derivative of the log of the absolute value of x. Okay. So how can we do that? So we can use our definition. So it's on a test function. This is equal to minus the integral from minus infinity to infinity of the derivative of the test function times natural log of x, the absolute value of x dx. Okay? So if this converges, then we can write this as the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of the integral from minus infinity to minus epsilon plus the integral from epsilon to infinity of phi prime of x natural log of x. So basically, here I'm using the property that limits of distributions are also distributions. So we can think of this as just cutting out the zero part, as we could do that using Heaviside functions, and then taking the limit where the arguments of the Heaviside functions change. So that's going to be well defined, because we're dealing with distribution space. And will give us back our original integral. Okay? So okay, so where can we go from there? So we can then write this as the limit as epsilon goes to 0, integral from minus infinity to minus epsilon plus the integral from epsilon to infinity. So we can integrate by parts, pull the derivative off the test function and put it onto the natural log of x, and get 1 over x, 5x, dx. And that gets rid of the minus sign. But then we also have boundary terms. So the boundaries at infinity are 0, but we have boundaries at minus epsilon and epsilon. And those terms are just 5 epsilon times the natural log of epsilon minus phi of minus epsilon natural log of epsilon. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, so let's see what we can do with this term. So that term so can write phi of epsilon as basically phi prime of 0, this term here, times epsilon. And we're also going to, so making a linear approximation near 0, we can also do the same thing with this term. So we'll get 2 there times the natural log of epsilon. Okay. And now, as we take the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of this, this whole thing, we get 0 because this will vanish more quickly than this. So that means that we're only left with this term here. And so that tells us then that this distributional derivative is equal to this, which, as you'll see more in the tutorial this afternoon, this is the definition of the principal value of the of 1 over x, which is a distribution acting on phi. And this will come up in quantum field theory, this distribution, and related distributions are important there. Yes?
If you use the different cutoff, not minus epsilon and plus epsilon, if you use something different, do you get it?
No. So, well, let me see. So you want epsilon 1 and epsilon 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
You make one approach to 0 much faster.
One much faster than the other. Then, let me see. So then you would just have here epsilon 1, epsilon 2, same thing over here. In this line, you'd have epsilon 1, epsilon 2, so each of these terms would still go to 0, yes. Right. I think it'd still be okay, yeah. Oh, right. Right, right. Yes. Yeah, that's the problem. Great. Yeah, thanks. So that's, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do this. So. Okay. In my last few minutes, I just like to tell you about one other operation. You can perform on distributions. It was asked about earlier, which is multiplication of a distribution by a function. Okay, so so again, when we want to define this distribution, we're just going to take as inspiration the example of a distribution that is a function. So in that case, if we have some function phi, we want to multiply by u, and we act with this product on a test function, we get phi of x, which we can just commute this and I'll write this out. U of x times the product here. Just commute and associate. And so that suggests the definition that this is just u times u of the product. Okay. So what does that mean? Let's look at a few examples. So I'm going to use the notation here that delta sub a of phi is equal to 5a. It's basically just the translation of the delta function, what you might think of as delta of x minus a. So that's my notation. And let's look at a quick example of what this implies. Okay, so let's use our favorite distribution, the delta function, and let's calculate psi times dA of phi, where psi is the distribution. So that's just equal, by our definition, to delta A of psi times phi, which is just psi times phi evaluated at A, by the definition of delta A, which is just 5a times 5a times 5a, which is equal to 5a times delta a of phi. So if we multiply a function by a delta function, we get the function evaluated at the point where the delta function is infinite, loosely. So in particular, this implies that x delta is 0. Okay, so one more quick example. So let's look at x times delta prime. We act with that on phi. We get delta prime of x phi, which is equal to minus delta of the derivative of x phi, which is equal to minus delta of phi minus x times delta of phi prime, which, because this is 0, x delta is 0, as we showed over here, is just minus delta of phi. So the x basically kills the derivative and gives you a minus sign. Any questions? Okay. Yes.
We know that the derivative of the delta function.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I think I was out of the room. So why would we get rid of the five?
Fine. Okay.
In the middle board.
The middle board. Okay, that's because we're choosing the test function space that has compact support.
But I don't see the test function is the Heaviside function.
No, phi is the test function.
Okay.
The Heaviside function
right.
is the distribution. Yes.
How is the limit in the test function space defined?
The limit in the test function space. So the test functions are smooth, continuous, differentiable functions. So they're very, it's a nice space. It's an even simpler space than like L2 of AB. They all have differentiability, and continuity. So for instance, say we have right. So you're asking what it means for the functions to approach each other?
Yeah.
We'll define that with respect to the norm or inner product. So in the test function space, we'll just use the inner product. Just the integral of the functions multiplied together. So if the functions approach each other, then the norm of the difference of the functions will approach zero.
But does the derivative converge if the function
does the derivative converge if the function converges?
If we define convergence this way, we're not going to have a complete space. As in, you could take a sequence of smooth functions that converge to a non-smooth function.
Right. Yes, the test function space is not complete. The distribution space is complete. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Any other questions?